and thanks for joining us now on KVCR for KVC Arts, arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming, welcoming the renowned pianist Jeffrey Siegel.
First of all, thank you for taking the time for this. We're going to be talking about the upcoming concert, Music of Joy and Peace, uplifting, soothing compositions of Bach, Mendelssohn, Beethoven, Schumann, and Gershwin. This is going to be 3 p.m. Sunday, March 22nd at the McCallum Theater. I'd love to go into it, I mean, right into it, with a bit about Keyboard Conversations. I know this is, gosh, a little over 40 years old now. If you could just talk about what this is, say, versus, say, a typical symphony or orchestra concert, or really most genres for that matter, how this differs and what this is.
I should stress that I am a concert pianist, and I have a long history of being soloist in white tie and tails with orchestras like the Los Angeles Philharmonic and giving concerts where I am a solo pianist, but I don't say a word about the music. Keyboard conversations are concerts with commentary. They're primarily concerts. Each work on the program is performed in its entirety. What we like to think of as the plus is that prior to the performance of each work, I speak briefly and in non-technical language to the audience about the piece of music they are to hear. And it is my hope that whatever I say about the composition in advance of their hearing it will make their listening experience richer, more focused, more accessible, something more than just sitting there and getting an earwash of sound. And my audiences, whether we're talking New York or London or Palm Desert, the audiences are made up of people who are avid music lovers, who already have heard the Moonlight Sonata of Beethoven many times and want to know why. It's a shocking revolutionary piece and what's going on in Beethoven's life that inspired the work. And I'm also getting people who've never heard the Moonlight Sonata, know they're missing something, and are looking for what a friend of mine called a gentle inoculation.
Oh,
into your hearing the music. So the audiences, wherever I do the series, are made up of people of all ages and different listening experiences.
So how did this start? Were you just giving a much more informal presentation? And then you realized, you know, people are not only open to this, but maybe sometimes would prefer a dialogue or explanatory introduction at the very least. This inoculation, I loved the way you put that.
Yeah, I should start with the principle that I'm very much of the belief, as a musician particularly, that music does not need anybody to say anything about it. Music expresses itself very well. But as so many musicians my age, I was tremendously impressed by Leonard Bernstein and how he was able, before conducting a piece of music, to say just a few words about it, carefully chosen and to the point, where as a result of what he said, once he started to conduct the piece of music, you really were listening with greater attention and appreciation. He was my model for this, and I've been at this for many, many years. In fact, the longest running series of Keyboard Conversations is in my hometown in Chicago at Northwestern University.
Oh, cool.
We are now in year 57 of the series. So at first it started out as a sideline to my white tie and tails formal career. And now I have to say that the Keyboard Conversations have become so popular that they've taken over my professional life. I'm almost exclusively doing Keyboard Conversations now, wherever I go.
Okay. Well, now, in these conversations, along with the such-and-such was composed by so-and-so, and, you know, the initial reception was fill-in-the-blank. Do you include any, super-secret behind-the-scenes goods like, I don't know, Rachmaninoff was actually face down at a local tavern when the initial phrase of it, you know, anything. I'd love to hear from
you. Yeah, it's interesting with some of the pieces that are coming up on this program on the 22nd of March. We have a work of Robert Schumann simply called Evening. Here was a man who's going through a very difficult time in his life. He's filled with constant frustration, and yet he finds going out in the evening and just immersing himself in nature and the beauty of the stars, it brings him inner peace. And he writes a piece of music called Evening, which is so calming and so uplifting, that it provides for the audience what the music provided for the composer who wrote the composition. And I think it's all the more meaningful, and I will share with the audience, what's going on in Schumann's life when he writes the piece and what relief it gave him to go out and stare at the stars, so to speak, in the evenings. That's just one example.
That's a great example. It sets a person up to find relaxation or peace or something deeper than... That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, and sometimes the piece of music itself has elements in it which are charming and vivacious. There's something that's happening with a particular rhythm as the composer uses it in the piece, or a funny changes of harmony that you don't expect. And in this case, I will preview a couple of these spots before playing the piece completely through. Oh. So it's already in the audience's ear, as well as mine, that this is why it comes as a surprise, what the composer's going to do here. He changes the rhythm, or you get this sudden loud chord that you didn't expect. I set them up and let them in on the secret, and then when the piece of music is performed in its entirety, the listener is on the inside track and is hearing the piece with greater appreciation, I think, than otherwise would be the case.
You're listening to KVCR. I'm David Fleming in conversation with pianist Jeffrey Siegel in concert soon at the McCallum Theater in Palm Desert. He'll be performing his latest Keyboard Conversations, Music of Joy and Peace. That's Sunday, March 22nd at the McCallum. Let's talk a bit more about the concert. We mentioned evening. Beyond that, we have Bach, Beethoven, Schumann, and Gershwin. What are the selections that you have for these? Not a great spoiler alert here.
Rachmaninoff, for example, wrote a piece of music called Love's Joy. It's one of the happiest pieces of music. And what he does is he takes a famous violin piece of that title by his friend Fritz Kreisler, and he makes a stupendous virtuoso keyboard transcription of a piece that's originally written for the violin. But it's a piece that raises the spirits. It's absolutely joyful. And that's one of the pieces on the program I know the audience will particularly enjoy. The Bach piece is called simply Rejoice, and it's a piece of music you feel you're happy to be alive.
Good, yeah.
So there is that. There's many treasures, some of the Gershwin things. For example, I Got Rhythm is on the program.
Oh, cool.
If you play the piece of music without the rhythmic syncopation that Gershwin's put into it, it can be the most boring piece in the world. And I show how a composer, let's say, of Mozart's time would have taken the same music and it would have sounded rather dull. What is Gershwin doing rhythmically with the music, which produces what we call syncopation, that takes the same notes, the same chords, and makes it sound syncopated, it sounds jazzy, it sounds like Gershwin rather than a classic composer would have written it. And I demonstrate this out of context and then sit down and play the piece straight through.
That, I've never even thought about that kind of a thing. I mean, taking the rhythm out, looking at it as a different type of a piece, that is incredible.
Right. Yeah, and it makes you appreciate all the more the genius and the individuality of the composer. And I think, though I'd be the first one to say it's not necessary, I think it makes the listening experience much more welcoming for somebody who's never heard the piece before. And somebody who's heard I Got Rhythm all their life will say, ah, that's what he's doing rhythmically, which makes it so intoxicating for me to listen to the piece with all these rhythmic places where you don't expect the accents to be.
Your bio states you being born into a musical family. If you could flesh this out a bit, tell me about this, please, and not just say what your parents did per se, but also music in the house or performances you were able to attend while forming your own interests as a, you know, relatively young person.
Yeah, my father was a string bass player. Mm. I grew up in Chicago, and he was in the Chicago Symphony Orchestra and played in various dance bands when he wasn't playing symphonic music. And as is the case with many musicians, they want their children to play for fun. They want their children to enjoy listening to music, but do something more sensible to earn a living. So while I was encouraged to enjoy music, little by little did my father feel, oh my goodness, my son is going in this direction. He wants to be a musician. And when I finally won a competition when I was 15 years old, the prize was which to give a concerto appearance with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra.
Oh.
And then when I got into Juilliard here in New York, the die seemed to be cast. And I think he was very proud when I made my Carnegie Hall debut. He came from Chicago for the performance. And I've been very, very fortunate. It's been a lifetime making music for me, which certainly I was not pushed into. On the contrary, my parents were very cautious about, by all means, enjoy playing, but do something more sensible to earn a living.
Oh my God, he's going to be a musician. I had so much more hopes for him.
Something like this.
Put him into theater.
Getting back to Gershwin for a moment.
Please.
One of the other pieces on the program is not actually a piano piece, but I've arranged it as such. It's called Promenade. And it was a film sequence he wrote for Fred Astaire, where he's dancing along, and then the harmonies indicate, just the way Gershwin writes the harmonies offbeat and so on, that Fred Astaire is about to fall down and trip. But of course, being Fred Astaire, he doesn't. And how is this all conveyed musically, where you don't even have to see what's going on in the film at this moment? It's called Promenade. The music indicates where he's in trouble and the fact that he's never loses his balance. This also is indicated by the melody and the rhythm.
Cool. This sounds just too cool. Again, the fact that you share this with people before you even start, it's one thing to talk about it, but to actually give the demo and say, okay, now this is going to be coming up, listen for this, and this is why it's like that. That's really incredible. This is a treat for people. And as you said earlier, there are people there just for the sake of loving the music and they want to hear it. But to be able to get some background and some introductory, that's phenomenal.
They want to hear it, but I think they want a listening experience that's enriched beyond just sitting there and absorbing the sound. We can all hear this repertoire today at the touch of a button with the greatest of ease. Yep. We're consuming sound. And in your business, you know very well what I'm talking about. What can we do to enrich that listening experience, to increase the appreciation where one is doing more than just sitting there and saying, well, that sounds nice, but to really appreciate the music and what it does for you as a receptive human being and how the composer wrote the piece of music. What are the musical ingredients he's using to cook up the piece, so to speak? And I think when you know this, it really heightens your listening experience.
Yeah, most certainly. Talking about your own interests, was it always classical or orchestral? Because at your age, you could have easily been drawn to the dark side of things like R&B or rock and roll or, heaven forbid, jazz.
I grew up in the age of Elvis Presley.
Yep.
I'm showing my age.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, I listened to this music, and in my young days, I did play in a dance band, and I did play cocktail music, etc. But it always, for me, right from the beginning, there was something about the great masters, Bach, Beethoven, and Brahms, which gave me something far beyond any other music that I was hearing. I considered it a privilege to hear this music and a great privilege to be able to play it and to share these great masterpieces. We call these pieces classic because they have survived their time period. A lot of music is great for what it is at a certain time, but one has to question, will one be listening to this in 25 years or 50 years? The pieces of music that we call classic have survived generation after generation. There's something about them that makes them appealing to people forever.
Back now with KVCR, I'm David Fleming. On this edition of the program, I'm speaking with Jeffrey Siegel in concert soon at the McCallum Theater in Palm Desert. He'll be performing and presenting, to be completely accurate, his latest Keyboard Conversations, Music of Joy and Peace, uplifting, soothing compositions of Bach, Mendelssohn, Beethoven, Schumann, and Gershwin. That's at 3 p.m. Sunday, March 22nd at the McCallum Theater in Palm Desert. I'm back to the concert in just a bit, but first a sidetrack to Gershwin. Beyond you appearing on recordings with so many, many symphonies, the biggest symphonies that many people will have ever heard of, and there are at least a few Gershwin-specific discs, which always gets my attention. I think many people's first exposure to Gershwin might indeed be, well, the Gershwins and Porgy and Bess. You, though, immersed in classical composers much earlier than many of us. What was your first exposure to Gershwin? George, Ira, George and Ira?
Understandably, my first Gershwin experience was hearing Rhapsody in Blue for the first time.
Okay.
And the piano part engaged me tremendously. And one of the first things I wanted to do was to get the music for the solo piano version that Gershwin made of Rhapsody in Blue, where he gets rid of the jazz band, he gets rid of the orchestra, and everything is incorporated for one pianist to play. I've played this a few times in my many years at the McCallum Theater. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think we're coming up on the 20th anniversary season.
Oh, cool.
This year is 19. Next year will be the 20th anniversary season. And if I may take a moment, for classical music particularly to survive today, and particularly in our country, but not just our country, whether we're talking a symphony orchestra or a string quartet series or a series of classical concerts at the McCallum, we are more than ever dependent on the generosity of various individuals who give to make it possible for classical music to survive in a place like the McCallum Theater. In my case, the Keyboard Conversations series is very, very much made possible by friends of mine, the Stonehills, Robin and Carlin, and there are others, but Robin and Carlin have made sure that the series could continue. And without people like this, I worry for the future of classical music live concerts in this country. Mm. And I just am most grateful. And people who enjoy my programs and the classical programs, to people like the Stonehills, the appreciation should be expressed.
Oh, absolutely. Many people see the performer. They don't know of the benefactors, for lack of a better way of saying it at the moment.
Right.
Is this concert that's coming up, again, this is March 22nd at the McCallum Theater, is this a concert that you put together specifically for this evening, or is this the version of Keyboard Conversations that you are touring currently?
Yeah, this program, which takes place on Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock on the 22nd, this is a program, I have to say, that I'm playing in many other cities. I give series of Keyboard Conversation programs in many different American cities, New York and Chicago and Dallas and Cleveland and Washington. And I tend to play in these cities the programs that I know the audiences will like. And the audiences are very similar, as I've mentioned before, in age and in listening experience in all these different cities. So I choose four or five programs that I will play everywhere through the course of the season, and I do this each season.
Okay. When you were putting it together, was it, I want to do something uplifting yet soothing? So you start going, okay, here are my favorite adagios, or whatever.
Yeah.
How did this come together? How did you choose which Gershwin, which Schumann, etc.?
It's a wonderful question, David. The piano repertoire, as I say very often, is a vast storage house of musical riches. In a lifetime, you cannot know it all. Mm. It's that vast. It's stupendous, the number of great works that have been written by great composers over the last, 300-some years. You get an idea for a theme of a program. I don't think I'm letting out a big secret when I say we are, as a moment in this country, are in great need of joy and peace. And that became the theme of the program. Then I sit down with that in mind, music of joy and peace, and I start looking at pieces of music that I feel would produce a great deal of joy, uplifting music, and peaceful, soothing music. And the list gets to be so long that if I were to play everything that's on the list, the program would take almost a week to play. So I have to figure out the limit of attention span, and each program, it's about 45 minutes, first half, a half hour, second half, and then a Q&A, which we can talk about. So it gets to be very selective what actually gets chosen from the large list to wind up on the program. And what always grieves me, what has to be left out, because there are so many wonderful works that need to be left out. And that's how this program comes about. If we can talk just a moment, one of the other features about Keyboard Conversations that audience enjoys is that there is a Q&A at the end of the program, immediately following the performance of the last piece. And the audience is encouraged to ask questions, to participate. And the questions can pertain to some of the music and composers that were on the program. They can also be very general questions. You know, how many hours a day do you practice? Did your mother make you study? All of this is fair game. And the audience loves to participate. I always feel with the McCallum audience in particular that if we didn't all have to go home, we'd probably have an hour and a half of questions after the two-hour concert.
Again, the latest Keyboard Conversations with Jeffrey Siegel is Sunday, March 22nd at 3 p.m. at the McCallum Theater in Palm Desert with music of Bach, Mendelssohn, Beethoven, Schumann, and Gershwin. You're listening to KVCR, and I'm David Fleming. The Q&A thing, that is really, really a cool part of this. I mean, not only we mentioned that with these keyboard conversations that we get introductions and, oh, let's say clues as to what's coming up, but then the Q&A afterward, that allows for, well, not only what was your favorite pet, Jeffrey, but also, okay, you set this up, and now I saw it and heard it, and this could give the germ of an idea for some more questions that come about from what
right.
you've already stated.
Right.
Incredible.
Right. That's what usually happens. Or, Mr. Siegel, you weren't clear when you talked about this and that. Could you give us a bit more detail? This is a question I appreciate as well.
Ah, wonderful. No, other than the you weren't very clear part, I suppose.
I got that, too. That's welcome as well.
Okay. I want to go back to Gershwin for just a second in that I was speaking with someone fairly recently and it's been bugging me. It may have been Michael Feinstein, but he had worked as Ira Gershwin's personal assistant for a decade or so. It was really surprising when I'd read that and he had some really nice things to say about that. But the most profound, I suppose, thing was that at some point he found some notebooks or what have you of lyrics which had never been coupled with music, or perhaps it was the other way around. You know, I mean, I could be quite happy with what we already have from the Gershwins and not hear anything new. But there is something rather alluring about something new and never completely transcribed and performed. Is there anything like this in admitting now that I haven't gone through your Gershwin recordings as deeply as I should have? Have you tackled any pieces like this, or do you have this on your, I don't want to say bucket list, but do you have these maybe in mind for something in the future? Anything like that at all?
There are a couple of solo piano pieces that did not get published. Mm-hmm. And one of the Gershwin biographers, Ed Jablonski, became a friend of mine really through the recording that Slatkin and I made of all the Gershwin piano and orchestra music. And Ed shared with me some sketches of Gershwin's that did not get published, some which did get published and are hard to find, and pieces of music even that had received a title from Gershwin, but were pieces of music that he either didn't publish or got published and didn't get published again in the future. It's through him that there are some gems that I found. One is simply called the Three-Quarter Blues, and I'm tempted to include that on the program.
Oh, you're trying to get me out to Palm Desert, aren't you? Okay.
Okay.
Oh, incredible. Oh, way cool. So, well, okay, now again, we were talking about music of joy and peace, uplifting, soothing compositions of Bach, Mendelssohn, Beethoven, Schumann, and Gershwin. This is, again, 3 p.m. Sunday, March 22nd at the McCallum Theater in Palm Desert. So this is going to be an incredible concert to look forward to and to not just hear, but to, I think, experience is a much better word for it, especially in this type of a setting. How about recordings or other types of performances?
Yeah, I'm greatly appreciative of the many requests I have to make recordings or to take some of the CDs of keyboard conversations that Random House produced as audiobooks many years ago and to get them up on YouTube. Maybe this summer, but I'm not traveling and playing so much, I can give some thought to this. But at the moment, if you want to hear a keyboard conversation, you come to the live concert.
Sweet.
There's nothing like a live concert, no.
Oh, I would think so. Jeffrey, I appreciate your time on this, and you're, again, a name that I've known for quite a few decades, but this is just now finally able to actually speak with you, and I appreciate your time and the perspectives on some of this, some things that I was hoping to hear and some things that I was surprised to hear, and so it's just really nice. I appreciated your time on this, and I hope to be able to make it out there March 22nd.
May I add, David,
please,
there will be one more keyboard conversation this season, and it's going to be a Tuesday night concert at 7 o'clock at the McCallum Theater called More of Your Favorite Things. We did a program, I think, last season called Some of Your Favorite Things. And there was such a wonderful reaction. There are famous pieces like Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata, but also Für Elise, that people love to hear. And the list was very, very long. I couldn't get by any means all the pieces that I wanted to play on that program. So we're calling this one More of Your Favorite Things. And it will have Für Elise on it, of Beethoven. Did Beethoven really write this for music students of all ages to play? Or was there something in his personal life that brought about a piece that he writes for Elise? Yeah. And each one of the pieces on the program, very famous ones, popular works like the Polonaise of Chopin. Each one of these pieces are not only familiar to most people, but have very interesting backgrounds and makes one appreciate all the more the piece of music when you know what the background is. And that's going to be the final Keyboard Conversation program of this season, and it's Tuesday night, the 5th of May at 7 p.m. at the McCallum.
Oh, fantastic. Now, as soon as you said favorite things, you don't even need the other words. Of course, we go right to Sound of Music. Will there be some of that in this as well, based on the title alone?
There probably will be some Gershwin on the program, yes. Gershwin's a composer very, very dear to my heart. And there's more to Gershwin than Rhapsody in Blue
for
the piano.
Yeah. I meant to say this earlier with Rhapsody in Blue. You could have easily been influenced to go to the piano or to the clarinet.
Right. It's wonderful. And it's been my experience to play the Gershwin Concerto or Rhapsody in Blue in many towns outside the United States. For example, I played it in Moscow. Mm-hmm. And it's just marvelous. It's one of the best ambassadorial pieces of music that we have. People hear this. They love Gershwin. They love American music. You can tell the way the audience reacts that it's making a friend of American music when they hear Gershwin.
No, without a doubt. That's a piece that has many iconic moments. Jeffrey, thank you so much for your time. This is going to make for a wonderful program. And again, I look forward to seeing it if I'm able to make it out there Sunday, March 22nd. And
yes.
I hope to be able to speak to you again in the future sometime. Your next recording, your next concert, whatever the case is.
I've enjoyed talking with you, and every program is different. So though you'll be talking to the same person, each program has lots of interesting things to be said about it. So I've enjoyed so much our conversation, David. You asked wonderful questions, and I hope that we can speak again. Thank you.
That was Jeffrey Siegel in concert soon at the McCallum Theater in Palm Desert with his latest Keyboard Conversations, music of joy and peace, uplifting, soothing compositions of Bach, Mendelssohn, Beethoven, Schumann, and Gershwin. That's at 3 p.m. Sunday, March 22nd. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Jeffrey Siegel. And here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Sandy Hodela, Adam Rainey Ruiz, Jessica Greenwell, and Shireen Awad. Many past shows can be found through Spotify, iTunes, NPR One, or many other podcast sites. And most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support. You can support this station with a contribution any time of the year at kvcrnews.org/support. There, it takes approaching 3 minutes of your time going through a very easy process. And that holds true for either a one-time gift or setting up a sustaining membership. Again, kvcrnews.org/support. And thanks again.